Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Tuesday, December 10th, 2019. Guys, welcome to the show, and we're going to get to Monday Night Raw and all of the insanity that was Monday Night Raw. Some really awesome stuff, too. There are some things that you will hear me critique and be a bit critical of, and rightfully so. But there's a lot of good here, a lot of good in a show that was, it felt different. There was something about this show that just felt different, and it felt like a turning point for a lot of different reasons, and we're going to get to all of those with Seth's official heel turn and aligning himself with Rezar and Akam, the AOP, and making it official, a very heartfelt promo. I think a lot of truth was in that for Seth Rollins, and so that was pretty cool to hear. And so we're going to get into that and the just absurdity that was the Lana Rusev angle that people seem to somehow be tuning in for to see the train wreck. I think that it's a train wreck type of viewership that are spiking this segment, and to why Vince McMahon decides to place this at the very top of the show tells you that the numbers support his decision on this, which makes me very angry. I have not been in support of this angle. I have said it's been tolerant at times, and Rusev's performances at times have been the saving grace for this disaster of a Jerry Springer, Vince McMahon fantasy angle that he just can't help himself with. It's right clearly from Vince's brain and Kevin Dunn's brain of their constant struggle with and their goal of disassociating themselves with being a wrestling company by throwing out angles like this. But these are the exact angles that drive fans crazy, fans of wrestling crazy, and also give those who don't like wrestling really ammunition to fire back at fans that do. It's that type of angle. So we're going to dive into that just in a moment. So before we do that, though, I want to invite you guys to check out the ad-free version of this show. It's on Patreon at patreon.com/WWE podcast. So you can head on over there and get yourself an ad-free version of this show. If you don't like the ads, you feel like they're interruptive, well, easy solution. Head over there and get yourself on board for just $1 a month. You can get the entire library, of this show ad-free. And lots of other good stuff on the way. You guys know the deal. You can go up from there and get tons of other big bonuses. And I'd invite you to check it out. But let's get to Monday Night Raw. Let's just do it. Let's go to the very top of the show here where it was Jerry the King Lawler. Don't worry, but by the way, this is the go-home show to TLC. You wouldn't know that there's a pay-per-view coming, but this show mildly reminded you that there's a pay-per-view on Sunday, and WWE certainly sent the message that this is a C pay-per-view. I mean, it just is, and you know, come December, I expect nothing less, so this is not a slight on WWE, because to be totally frank, the nature of the business every December is to kind of put things on hold, do programs that are maybe run its course, or string out programs longer than needed to go past December into January, when we have the Royal Rumble of that really restarts things and you get right into the WrestleMania season. So to me, this is nothing more than kind of a hold me over. I don't expect any major developments. And this is the perfect example that you could use if you are against once a month pay-per-views, where you could say, how about we only hold a pay-per-view when it's worth holding a pay-per-view? And this is just, well, it's kind of one of those, well, it's on the calendar, we got to do it. rather than saying, hey, let's build to a pay-per-view and build to a card and develop storylines in a proper amount of time so that when the pay-per-view comes around, it makes sense to have it and you have enough build and expectation and you have anticipation built for the pay-per-view. In this case, if anybody is actually anticipating TLC, I would ask that you see your local medical facility, because I just don't know how anyone is super excited about this. And, you know, this week, you know, I will cover it, of course. I will still watch it, of course. And am I mildly excited? I guess, because it's a pay-per-view and, you know, we'll get tables, ladders, and chairs, and we get to see and hear toys referred to, chairs and ladders and actual weapons referred to as toys. Even Samoa Joe making that cardinal sin reference of saying that, weapons were, somebody was going to the toy box. I forget who it was. It might have been the Kabuki Warriors before they put Becky through the table. He's mentioned, oh, they're going to the toy box. I don't understand how that's beneficial to, or in a way that makes this segment feel more important and makes it seem like what's happening to Becky is serious. When you refer to toys, I don't think serious. I know it's a cute way to refer to weapons, but we don't say the word weapons. I mean, I don't know what it is. I just don't understand the logic behind referring to weapons as toys. But we'll get a lot of those references on Sunday, I'm sure, because it's a cute way to refer to weapons. So get ready for that at nauseam come Sunday. So anyway, we start out with Jerry the King Lawler on Raw. And, of course, Jerry the King Lawler is the one to be hosting this, because who else but Jerry the King Lawler to get involved in scandals? And nothing like a scandal to get Vince McMahon's eyes perked up and paying attention at a production meeting. Nothing like a good scandal. We don't need that wrestling. It's all about the scandals and, entertaining TV or whatever the hell he thinks this is. Again, there have been worse things in the world of WWE. Certainly, but this is getting just weird, because not only is it just in terms of logic and in terms of continuity and in terms of common sense, is this just littered with holes in all of those areas, but it's kind of obnoxious to watch at times, and unfortunately the crowd continues to support it, which is why Vince goes, oh, damn it, I told you, this is good, you know what, right? So, anyway, let's go here. So, Jerry the King Lawler comes out, and he invites Lana out, who comes out with her lawyer, and Rusev comes out next. So, Lana and Rusev sit down at the table, and Lana starts cutting a promo about how Rusev made things all about him when the fans started chanting Rusev Day. So, let me get this straight. Lana originally said, oh, I did this because all you wanted was sex. And then you cheated on me. Then it's all about Rusev Day. And it's all about you. You make it all about you. This is what makes it even weirder, right? So Lana says that she is waiving the distance clause in her restraining order for tonight, so that they could get this signed. But hey, you can actually have these mailed in or just meet separately with your attorneys. But hey, so she has a waiver on the distance clause. And then later in the promo, in their just obnoxious argument, we have Lana say that if you take any steps closer, I'll have you go to jail for a very long, long time. So I guess you can just arbitrarily decide when you want to activate the restraining order restriction and just verbally say that you're going to now start upholding the distance clause. Isn't that what a restraining order is in and of itself, though? There's not really any other provisions as far as I know. The biggest is just you can't come within X amount of feet or yards or miles of this person, right? I don't know. So I guess you can just arbitrarily decide when to activate it, not just by saying it. That's a thing legally, right? So we have her coming out and Lana continues ranting, says she's smart and intelligent and blames the WWE universe. I still hate that term. It's been invoked now for like 7-8 years or something, maybe more, and I just can't stand this corporate label they place. They can't just say WWE fans. They can't. They have to say Universe. Why? And just they're fans. I'm not a Universe. I'm a fan of WWE. Well, it's an all-encompassing term for the fans. It sounds stupid. There's no other way to put it. Does anybody else feel this way? Or am I the only one that just continues to rag on about this WWE Universe label? We're fans. I'm a fan of WWE. I guess fan is an antiquated term, probably according to Vince McMahon, and I don't know. I'm on a Vince McMahon tirade right now. Okay, moving down. Lana continues, and Rusev tells the fans this is what he had to deal with his entire marriage and points to some footage on the screen of Lana and Lashley being arrested last week. And Lana freaks out and starts ranting again. He'll never find someone like her. Rusev says he can barely stand her and doesn't want to find someone like her. And Lana says Rusev chose WWE over her and screams. And it's bizarre. And her threatening to put him in jail for if he violates the restraining order, which again she just activated by saying it, is laughable considering the last three times he violated it. In the restaurant, throwing Lashley off the stage, and last week, none of that makes any bit of difference. And she said that if he violates it every single time, he's going to go to jail, of which he has not done. And I can tell you, if you violate a restraining order that blatantly, you do go to jail. So it makes no sense how Lana never invoked him or enforced that on him to have him arrested. It's just empty threats, and none of it ever came to fruition. It's bizarre. So, can you tell this storyline was not thought out? Can you tell it was just like a brainchild of Vince McMahon in a boardroom meeting and production meeting saying, what if we have Lana and Rusev get a divorce, and it's Lana comes out and starts making out with Bobby Lashley? Wouldn't that be great? You know what? I want to say the word, but it's PG. I just can hear the nonsense, but no congruity and no structure put around it. It's the most flaccid, there's a word for you, loose, just bizarre structure around a story that I've ever seen. It's all over the place, and it's impossible to follow, and I don't know. So let's move on and put on, and honestly, what makes this even harder is Lana's performances on the mic are weird. I think the only thing good about it is she's a really nice to look at. Yeah, she's a really good-looking woman. Okay, I know that, but that's really the only redeeming quality at this point. She has weird inflections and moments when she pauses when she shouldn't, and sometimes her emotions don't feel legitimate. She's not the worst promo in the world. I just don't think she's found her stride yet, which also makes this kind of double bad. And Rusev, honestly, he's had his moments, but Rusev, I think, has underperformed at times where he could say lines that would be much funnier and more time, better time than the things that he said. I'm just ranting. Okay, so let's keep going here. They argue over the custody of their puppy. Yeah. They actually do this and start yelling. Lana signs the divorce papers first, and Rusev says before he signs, he needs something from Lana. He wants a match with her boyfriend. Lashley comes out, starts talking trash, and says that once he signs this paper, he's going to marry Lana. And Rusev says that's fine as long as he still gets to fight Lashley on Rusev Day. So, all right, yeah, I'm going to move on from this segment because it's. I'm interested to see what the numbers were for this segment in particular. If it was something that Vince McMahon was envisioning the numbers for, or and hopefully does not validate his incessant need to have these entertainment, and I put that in air quotes, these entertainment segments over valuable wrestling. I understand this needs to be sprinkled in, but it was just I just feel like it was just loosely talked about, and someone said, well, let's just put it together, make it make sense. And it just hasn't. It just hasn't all the way through. There's no follow through on Rusev actually being arrested for violating restraining orders. There's no explanation in follow-up to the cheating. If Rusev was actually, or if Lana actually believed he cheated, and why did Lana believe Bobby Lashley cheated? Or I'm sorry, why did Lana believe Bobby Lashley that Rusev cheated and not just ask Rusev? I mean, that's because that was the first time he heard about it. There's so many things. It's bizarre. Okay, moving on the line here. Kevin Owens is backstage. Owens says that Rollins is the one who told AOP to attack him, that attacked him last week. And he thinks it's because he's the only one who stood up to Rollins during his little speech. And he goes on a hunt for AOP and runs into Mysterio, who then lends him his lead pipe. So this was a nice hook throughout the show. I like when there's a hook or a storyline, main storyline, woven throughout the show. It has worked in the past. It's a tried and true formula. And I like when they do this because it keeps you wondering what's the payoff. It keeps you wondering, you know, how is this going to end, right? And I think they did a nice job with this. And credit to Kevin Owens for being the smart babyface. He's been, you know, extremely intelligent throughout this whole storyline, which I like. He's consistently smart and not believing anything that Seth Rollins says. So, all right. We had Drew McIntyre versus Matt Hardy as well. And Drew McIntyre won, as he should. I understand Matt Hardy is Matt Hardy, but Drew McIntyre is the future. I mean, let's face it. Drew hit his finish, the Claymore, and just that's the way it was. It was a matter-of-fact win against a significant star. And I think this is hopefully, I keep saying this, I hope it's the rebuild of Drew McIntyre and an actual attempt to build a foundation for a true push for Drew. I will sing his praises until he gets what he deserves, and that is a long championship run, like 6 to 12 months being champion. I think he could do it. I think he has the ability. He has the athleticism. He has the promo ability. He has the believability. He has the presence, all of the above. He has everything you need. Every box you could check, he has. I love it. He's got the stature, everything. So, I hope this win is not just a, well, we got to get Drew McIntyre on the show, and Matt Hardy's still around, and he's credible, so let's have Drew beat Matt. I hope there's a plan here. I hope there's a meaning behind this win, because Matt Hardy is not, your local performer. Matt Hardy is Matt Hardy. I mean, think about the legacy he's left in pro wrestling, not just in WWE, but even in TNA. You know, the broken Matt Hardy. Remember that? We all remember that. It became woken Matt Hardy or whatever it was in WWE. They couldn't get the rights to it and just became woke Matt Hardy, which is ironic considering the political environment we're in now, right? For those that follow politics, know what I'm talking about. But I think that Matt Hardy, having Drew beat Matt the way he did and in the time frame he did, should mean something. I don't need it to be just another win. Matt Hardy, again, we need to realize who Matt Hardy was and is and represents. So I just don't want it to be a nothing win. Okay, we go backstage where Charlotte approaches Becky. They talk about their issues. And Charlotte offers to form an alliance with Becky to take out the Kabuki Warriors, which Becky declines and says she's going to take them 2-on-1. So we then get backstage. And by the way, I will say about Becky and Charlotte, I like this more than I thought I would. Once Becky and Charlotte ended their, felt like, years of a program, which, again, they're very good in the ring together, no doubt, which is why they kept them together for so long as opponents. And I said I didn't want to have these two in any kind of segment together for years, right? I don't need to see them in the same segment for any reason ever again. I mean, but seeing them try to, I guess, hesitantly form an alliance is a good strategy. And I like how Becky is dismissive of Charlotte at first. They acknowledge they don't like each other. I like it. That's smart. It makes sense after months and months and months and years of fighting each other and dissing each other at each other's throats to have them acknowledge that, hey, we don't like each other, but we have a common enemy, and Becky's still kind of a bit hesitant. There should be that hesitancy, and that's smart. So praise to the WWE on this storyline in terms of congruity and in terms of logic. This makes a lot of sense. So, and obviously we get more of a development in this story down the line here. So, okay. Owen sees Mojo Rawley backstage. Now, this is something I really enjoyed from a Kevin Owens perspective, which I think he had a really good night, a banner night. I enjoyed Kevin Owens from top to bottom here, and having him run into Mojo, who's being an obnoxious, you know what, talking about how, yeah, I saw AOP go this way. Oh, wait a minute, I saw it go that way. And then basically saying, oh, I saw him go both directions, trying to be an obnoxious a-hole. And I like how Kevin Owens slapped him in the face. That to me, I mean, because Mojo deserved it. I loved it. Mojo, I mean, I guess it's from own personal experience. Like, whenever you're in a dire situation and you have a, like somebody make a joke out about you know, something you really need, and they're saying, oh, I have that. And then they really don't have it. And they're just being an a-hole. And you, but you're like, no, I like really need to know. But apparently their thirst for trying to make a joke at your expense when you're actually needing something is at a higher premium, then yeah, they need to be punched right in the face. So I enjoy that from Kevin Owens. That was a solid segment for, again, a solid night, very solid night for Kevin Owens. Okay, then we get a video package announcing Batista's induction into the WWE Hall of Fame for the class of 2020. Really enjoyed that as well, as far as Batista deserving of that. Of course he is. And yes, the NWO. The NWO, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Hogan, and X-Pac Shawn Waltman are going to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. And many people are saying, oh my God, Hogan's being inducted twice. Anybody who likes him or, you know, supports him, F them, F you, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, let's take a step back here. I just want to comment on this. If you don't recognize the contributions that, and again, I'm speaking specifically about Hulk Hogan because that seems to be the focal point of everybody who just, you know, will not let go of the racist comments he made years and years and years and years ago, of which he has publicly apologized for. He was fired from WWE for many a year, 3 years or 4 years, and now he's back. So how long are we supposed to punish somebody, you know, for making comments that, again, I do not support. I think they were awful. Of course, all of that. But again, you know, you do the crime, you do the time. Are we just supposed to just, you know, basically just, you know, blackball him forever? Consider the contributions he's made. Consider the contributions that Hulk Hogan has made in his career to the sport of professional wrestling. And when you talk about the NWO, how can that group not be inducted? Are you going to just cut off your nose to spite your face and say, well, the NWO is going to be inducted, but F Hogan, he's not going to be there. You can't do that. Hulk Hogan was the face of the NWO. So you're just going to, again, you're going to sacrifice the whole group's induction because people are saying, F Hogan, grow up. Seriously. I mean, the whole thing is, the world is run by how people feel. Everybody's feelings. Everyone's got feelings. Everyone, oh, well, that doesn't make me feel good, or no, that's offensive. Everyone hides behind their identity. They're you know, I'm getting all political. But the fact of the matter is, the contributions that Hulk Hogan has made is undeniable and should absolutely be recognized in the professional wrestling world. The comments that he made years ago that were being recorded at his, not of his knowledge, okay? We all know that, and there's no disputing any of that. We know that. But to negate everything he's contributed to the wrestling world for those, the silly comments he made, of which he's apologized for and been punished for, I think is a little bit, of overkill to really destroy everything he's done because of that. I mean, so anyway, I think I've made my point, but the NWO absolutely are deserving. I don't care if Hogan's in twice. I don't give a damn, right? Think about this. What about D-Generation X? Yeah. Inducted. You're saying they shouldn't be inducted twice? Shawn Michaels of his own career and the D-Generation X character or D-Generation X group? I mean, you can make how many examples? Just because someone shouldn't be inducted twice, get over yourself. Seriously. All right. Comments on Twitter. Sometimes these comments on Twitter are just, and I'm not going to name who it is or anything like that, but people are just, some people just, All right, moving on to the Viking Raiders and Street Profits. We got the Street Profits here, and not just this segment, but by the way, they lost this relatively quickly. And I like that the Viking Raiders, though, are at least getting a little bit of a shine. You can't say they're truly heels. I mean, they had good, all four men had, good sportsmanship at the end, even though that they beat, the Viking Raiders beat the Street Profits straight up. There was some mutual respect there, which says that, hey, we're not heels. We're all baby faces here. And so I guess they're still defined as faces, and that's fine. But I feel like the Viking Raiders never capitalized on their initial win, their initial victory that the crowd seemed behind. I remember the pop they had. They had a lot of momentum behind them after winning the belts, and then it just got dropped. And that seems to be the theme a lot of times with WWE booking, where you have somebody make a turn, win a championship, and then there's like, what are we doing after that to keep the momentum going? Well, I don't know. It'll just kind of be a self fanning flame, and it'll just keep going. That's not how it works, and it seems like a lot of times those are big decisions made and no follow through. Big mistake. But the Viking Raiders are trying to revive whatever momentum they had. And so after the match, we got Seth Rollins coming out to the ring and takes the spotlight and gets on the mic and calls out ALP. They have unfinished business. And then we have Kevin Owens come out. Owens says he gets to the ring and exchanges words. Owens says if the AOP was here tonight, he would have found them already, and trashes Rollins and ends up leaving. The AOP appear on screen and speak in some foreign language again, which they need to do something about that. I mean, maybe that's their gimmick and maybe it'll work. I doubt it. I'm not a fan of not understanding what wrestlers are saying. I don't mind it here and there if they have a second language of which they feel superior whenever they use that language to belittle the fans that don't understand their language of their home country or whatever. But if they are 99% of the time speaking in their native language, it's not a good way to communicate to fans that 99.9% do not understand what the F you're saying. Outside of the first word he said, which was Kevin, and then he went into like, you know, a jibber jabber. I mean, I have no effing clue what he said. And same goes for the Kabuki Warriors, but we'll get there. So, Owens tells him to bring it, but instead Sami Zayn and Mojo Rawley comes out, and Sami says he's not just a manager, he's a liberator, and what Owens did to Mojo backstage was out of line, and says it was wrong, and he wants Owens to do the right thing and apologize. He asks Mojo to apologize, and Mojo gets on Owens' face, and Sami tells him to calm down. And Mojo says anybody can be a tough guy with a pipe in their hand. Owens throws him the pipe, then gives him a stunner. Sami retreats, and Owens nails Mojo with the pipe. Good stuff here. A little bit stone cold here. I'm fine with that. I don't want him to be a direct reflection of Austin, but the stunner is synonymous with stone cold. This was a kind of a stone cold moment. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Mojo Rawley. For the first time getting the spotlight in a way that might have been the most in his entire career. I mean, yeah, he got laid out on his back, but he showed a little bit of something here. I feel like he can be a much better heel than he can be a babyface. There's something here. There's something here with Rawley, and I know it was brief, but Mojo Rawley has something that maybe they can build on. And I love how Sami Zayn at least explained how the hell he's here. That he's got a managerial license, which I don't even know if that's a thing, but apparently it is. And that since he has that license, it allows him to go between shows. I like it. Thank you for explaining. At the same time, I knew WWE could not help themselves but violate the draft sooner rather than later. So there's that too. But I at least like that they explained it. Back from commercial break, we see Kevin Owens walking through the halls of the arena looking for AOP. And then we get Aleister Black versus Akira Tozawa, of which, guess who wins? Aleister Black, right? No surprise there. Aleister Black continues to just win against these lower mid-card guys, and it's almost as if he's kind of a pot simmering, and they're just continuing to stack up wins for him, establish him as a big threat, so that when he gets to a competitor that is a little bit tougher, a little bit harder, a little bit more legitimate, how is he going to stack up against them? So I'm fine with this. I'm fine with this. Eventually, they're going to move him up. Nothing wrong with this. Humberto Carrillo versus Andrade. Some good offense at the beginning from Humberto. Several kicks, standing rolling moonsault for a two count. Andrade set up Humberto for the running knee strike in the corner, but Humberto dodged it, hits a drop kick, then an Aztec press for a two count. Andrade came back with his running knee strike, but Humberto fired back with a running kick. Then Zelina gets on the apron, and Andrade ends up accidentally running into her and knocking her to the floor. Humberto hops up on Andrade's shoulder and pins him with the victory roll for the three count. The only thing coming out of this, I mean, first of all, Humberto Carrillo winning is, I think, needed for Humberto, who continued to put up a good fight, or as Michael Cole would say, a very game Humberto Carrillo. That seems to be, well, it's not even Michael Cole, it's just the announcers in general are, you know, what's the word of the day? What do we say? Are they very game, right? Or would somebody take them to the limit? I don't know, whatever the phraseology of the day is, but Humberto needed this win more, I think, than Andrade did. I think the development here for Andrade is that he and Zelina, for the first time, had a miscue. Can they survive it? Is this a trend? We'll see. That's the story here. Not that Andrade lost, but how he lost with Zelina is Andrade's story. And the bigger story for Humberto is, hey, getting a win. He needed a win. He needed one. Okay. But after the match, Zelina and Andrade get into a shouting match. So, again, take that for what it's worth. It could be just temporary. Maybe they'll resolve it next week, but could the two be on a split? I hope not. I like Zelina and Andrade. I think she adds a hell of a lot to his character. I really, really do. I think she adds more than the average manager does. Okay, Rey Mysterio's backstage for a promo. He gets says the U.S. title means everything to him and cuts a promo on AJ. And then that's pretty much it. We get a promo for Austin interviewing Goldberg on the WWE Network, which I can't wait to check out. Very interested in that. I love the Broken Skull session so far. I know it's only one episode in with Taker, but I like the format. All right, let's see here. Kevin Owens is shown backstage walking around again with a metal pipe, finds the truck that AOP arrived in, and it looks like there's somebody sitting in there after he just basically trashes the van with smashing the windows, putting the scratches on the car, busting up handles. He gets into the van in the back and looks like someone's sitting there with his back turned. AOP attack Owens from behind and beat him down. They slam Owens' head into the van of the door, and then Seth gets out, revealing the hoodie he has on and an evil look on his face, and gives a curb stomp to Owens on the arena floor, and then Seth walks off with the AOP. So here's where the full turn happened. I mean, yes, the turn happened at that moment, but here's Seth's explanation. And I'm surprised that they actually went this far to explain it on the same show. It felt like it was what would happen the next time Raw came on the air next Monday. I think it was done because we have a pay-per-view Sunday and they wanted to firmly establish Seth as a heel. And they wanted to get this group together to do some damage at TLC. I think that's where they were going. So that's why they had to kind of put this two segments into one show type of deal. But Seth comes out and says, "What do you want from me?" And says that he used to get along with the WWE fans, insert your own stupid corporate word there, but something went wrong and they don't like him anymore and he can't figure out why. Seth says he doesn't take nights off. He fights through injuries. He puts it all on the line in the ring for each and every one of us. And as Seth says, he sticks his neck out for fans in the ring and in the media. And in return, he gets spit on and disrespected. And he told everyone last week he had nothing to do with AOP. That was the truth, but that wasn't good enough. Since fans jumped on the Owens bandwagon, and they wanted to push him, it's time for him to push back. He says that the fans and Owens drove him to stand side by side with two men who understand the AOP, The AOP come out to the ring and stand next to Rollins. So it's symbolically, it's now official. They all leave together. And as Owens is being loaded into an ambulance, of which I would not want those EMTs working on me, they could not get that stretcher into the ambulance. I'll just say that. I mean, that was funny. Out of all the ambulance segments we've had in professional wrestling over the last 25 years, I have never seen any of the EMTs have issue with the stretcher getting into the ambulance. That was kind of funny, actually. But so he also mentioned in this promo about how he beat Brock Lesnar and brought not once but twice and brought the Universal Championship back for us. But I don't. I think Seth is so caught up. And here's. I'll take a step back. I think what Seth said was 100% from his guts. I really believe that. I think the lot of this had to do with Seth feeling truly frustrated with fans and not understanding why they were turning on him. And it's not a deal of, well, you either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain. I don't see this as the case. I mean, that wouldn't have been the case with Stone Cold Steve Austin. The fans were never going to boo him. Even during his heel turn, he wasn't truly booed. Fans reluctantly were like, oh. I mean, Austin's heel turn is largely viewed as unsuccessful, at least from the standard that Stone Cold Steve Austin, Steve Williams set for it when he did it on at WrestleMania 17 and turned on the fans and aligned himself with Vince McMahon. So I don't really buy that moniker, that cop-out, that excuse of, well, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. It's very Batman-ish. I think that was that from The Dark Knight or The Dark Knight Rises? One of them, right? God, those are such good movies. But it was from one of them. And I think that's what Seth was alluding to. You know, he made the reference, not in this promo, but it was in WWE Backstage that, you know, look at Tom Brady. You know, people just want to see somebody knock him off his perch. I don't think Seth is seeing the forest through the trees here. I think Seth is a little bit delusional and drinking too much of the Kool-Aid that WWE management has been forcing him to drink. I don't think it's a fact of, well, you got to the mountaintop, now we want to see you fall. I don't think he was ever that great of a babyface to begin with. And he, I mean, here's some of the things as to why the fans, I think, turned on him. I've been watching this long enough to feel it. I felt it. He never truly connected as a face. He felt a bit inauthentic. He was saying and doing all the right things. As he said, that's the problem. He seemed a little bit too good, or all of his speeches and his promos of the "we did it" stuff, all of that was a little bit too clean. It wasn't real. That's your problem. It was too polished. And so that was one. Again, one problem. And then you look at the fact of Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins when they teamed together against Lacey Evans and Baron Corbin. They had terrible on-air chemistry. Obnoxious on-air, on-screen chemistry, of which Becky has rebounded and Seth didn't. That was awful. Awful. Seth never, I mean, he was just kind of there at times. He didn't have a whole lot of depth as a babyface. You know, there were times where he would say that this is his life, this is everything, and we're supposed to just get behind him and relate. He doesn't, I think, have the knack to relate as a babyface. He has done so many heinous things, turning on the Shield, being responsible for the Shield's destruction, joining the Authority, only to be dumped by the Authority, and then he was forced to leave the Authority, not leaving of his own accord. And then just the way he speaks, his promos, his voice tone and inflection, his natural voice screams heel. You put all this together, and it's just a recipe for, you're boring us, Seth. You got to the mountaintop. You know, we could say that we were tired of Brock being champion and we wanted to see someone take Brock down, but just only because Brock Lesnar held it forever and he wasn't there. It wasn't so much that we wanted to see Seth as champion. We just wanted to see someone who was believable enough to take it away from him so that we could have a championship that is actually on TV, at least semi-regularly. And that's what I think it was. And Seth was the only believable guy that could do it and was really good in the ring. And it's not about Seth, oh, I put it all on the line for you guys. Here's the thing. Here's the thing that I think a lot of people are missing in today's 2019 professional wrestling ideology. It's not about always having five-star matches. I am not of the belief that having five-star matches consistently will make you a huge star. I don't believe that. And when I say five-star matches, I'm talking about the standard that is set by 2019 and soon to be 2020, where we have to do kickouts of finishers and crazy moves and crazy reversals and 720 splashes and 14 suicide dives. That is what 2019, 2020 wrestling has become, of what the definition of this is awesome chants are deserving of. And I'm not of that belief. I'm not in that crowd. I'm of the belief of having an awesome story. Awesome story. Put it on damn creative. Put it on creative to come up with these stories. That's their damn job. And yes, execution is the other piece, of which you have to have agents help the wrestlers do what they need to do to execute it in the way the vision was laid out. And there are two players in the success of a storyline coming together and the match being great. I don't always need a five-star match. It's not always about having a five-star match, at least in the standard of today's five-star match standard. I don't need that. I need a great story, intriguing characters, over-the-top characters that are believable, promos that don't feel mechanical. Everybody doesn't need to have a zinger line at the end of every promo. Everybody's too polished. Everything's so squeaky clean and cute with the lines that are delivered that it doesn't feel authentic because it's done too well. It's a really weird dynamic. I don't need promos feeling so cute and so well thought out that it's not believable. And they sacrifice authenticity and believability for, well, it's going to be a great line or it'll be a great comeback. It'll be funny. No, I would rather have a guy or gal go out there and give me what's in their brains, know which direction they're going, tell me how to get there, and I'll get you there, and have intriguing characters that can go out and can put on a good match, but tell a good story in the ring at a pace that a story is supposed to be told, and that's chapter by chapter. It's almost as if in today's world of wrestling, and even, again, in WWE specifically too, you have almost a speed reader who is controlling the WWE or the wrestling world. In other words, I have somebody who's just going flip, 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 flip the page, flip, 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 instead of someone who's dissecting and digesting what they're reading and understanding the story going on and having a commentator talk about what's going on in the ring and not just speeding through, talking about other crap. Let's get to the next thing. I feel like the matches go too quick, and I don't. Okay, so I'm ranting, but anyway, I don't even know how the hell I got here. Let's get back to Monday Night Raw because I'm going off way off. But the whole Seth thing is how I got here. I was looking at my notes. That's how we got here with the whole Seth deal. I will praise this for the fact that it felt real. I am 100% behind Seth Rollins and AOP. I think that's a hell of an intriguing group. You have Seth and two heaters, two heavies that can do his bidding, do his dirty work. And if he's blaming the fans because we're the ones that turned on him and now our negativity has forced him to do this. I love that. Not taking any responsibility for anything. That's a completely heinous trait to have. It's a unlikable trait to have. And that is a great heel in the making. So I'm very interested to see what Seth, the heel 2.0, can do. Very interested. So I'm loving this pairing. I like his promo, but I think that Seth's thinking is faulty as to why the fans, quote, turned on him. You know, they have to look no further than creative. Sometimes your execution, you have a natural inkling to be heel anyway. WWE effed up your return at Extreme Rules when he returned, and I forget what year it was, 2012, no, 2015, 15 when I had Extreme Rules. The fans were ready to embrace him. They didn't. WWE turned him heel, and that was a completely, it was a massive misstep. So many different things, guys. Just a litany of things. So what do you want from me, Seth? I want you to be authentic. I want you to do and think and tell me what you're thinking without actually trying to remember what you just read backstage. That's what I want from you. I want a heel Seth Rollins, because I think that's you're better suited as. You were very bland as a babyface. That's what I want from you. So you want your answer? There it is. Okay. Becky Lynch versus Asuka and Kairi Sane. I liked this match. I thought it was very good. Having Becky not lose, but just have Asuka pulls Kairi out to ringside as she was being put in the disarmer. And then Becky follows him outside. Asuka hits Becky with a steel chair and the ref calls for the bell. So yeah, Becky won, but it was by disqualification, so it doesn't really count, I guess. Asuka and Kairi set up tables at ringside. They lay Becky on it, and Kairi goes up to the top and gives Becky the flying elbow drop through the table onto the floor. Becky is backstage getting iced. Charlotte comes in, then leaves, and Kairi and Asuka attack Charlotte. They beat down Charlotte in the hallway and leave. So that leads to an interview backstage where they challenge Charlotte and Becky to a tag team match. And they'll put their women's tag team titles on the line. This is where things kind of go off the rails for me. As much as I'm enjoying Kairi and Asuka as a team and becoming relevant and badass and legitimate and kicking women's asses, which I'm 100% behind. I think that's a great strategy. They feel more relevant. They have new entrance music. Although their attire and their struts to the ring don't really fit their new music. It's particularly Kairi Sane, who's still twirling her umbrella around. I would like to see them be a more of a cohesive unit and conform to the great music that they now have together. Just their movements and their entrance isn't syncing yet. They have the music. Now kind of, you know, modify your movements and your outfits. I think your attire would help. So, and also, I don't understand the fact that their heels offering up their tag team championships to Becky and Charlotte. I mean, that doesn't make sense either. It's a little bit backwards, but I'll roll with it because I don't feel like getting on another rant. So we have Eric Rowan and an enhancement talent. Eric Rowan destroys this individual. I didn't get his name after he grabbed the cage that's carrying something and tried to take it. But, I guess Eric Rowan caught up to him and gave him the Iron Claw four times, something like that. The ref called for the bell. So I don't even know what to make of it. He yells at this individual and goes up to the cage and says that everything's okay now. And he called it somebody. So, or someone rather. If it was so precious to him, wouldn't he have, as he's in the before the match, instead of having it, 60 feet away at the top of the ramp, brought it back to the ramp so he could keep an eye on it? If it meant that much to him? I don't know. Okay. Poking holes in logic. That's just what this show does. Poking holes in logic. Maybe I'll just rename the show. Okay. So back from the break, Becky and Charlotte are shown in the trainer's office, and they seem to agree to challenge Asuka and Kairi for their tag titles at TLC. Again, still reluctantly, Becky more so. Makes sense. I'm fine with this. And do I expect them to win? That's another discussion. That's intriguing. Having Becky two belts again, which I still don't like that nickname, but having Becky and Charlotte as tag team champions, could it happen? Very much so. Again, tune in Saturday for your TLC predictions and tomorrow for Wrestling Nostalgia, and then Thursday again, and Thursday and Friday for your AEW and NXT reviews. So lots of shows coming up this week. We then get Angelo Ford Ford and Dawkins from the Street Profits. They started an SNL weekend update themed skit. They talk about some matches for the TLC card and then crack some jokes about the competitors. I don't know. I think Vince McMahon looks at these guys as a comedy, kind of like he looks at Heavy Machinery as comedy, particularly Otis. I didn't hate it. I went into this when it first came up. I said, oh, this is going to be terrible. Then I came away saying they didn't kill it. Right. I mean, if they're using them as just props to promote the pay-per-view and give people a lineup, fine. I don't know if this is going to be something consistent, but okay. Rey Mysterio versus AJ Styles for the United States Championship was next tier. Good match. I really enjoyed this match. I think it would have been about 11, 12 minutes. Great match, except for the end, right? I mean, they botched the end. I'm not going to get on them for that because that was a tricky move to do, a Hurricane Rana into a Styles clash. You know, two professionals out there, you're going to have a clunker of a moment every now and then. It's just going to happen. Unfortunately, it had to be the final move set of the match. So it's what people think of. But outside of this, I think they worked well together. I enjoyed it. And having Rey Mysterio pin AJ Styles, I think was the right move. AJ Styles is clearly in a program with Randy Orton. It wouldn't make sense for AJ Styles to win the United States Championship, only to get in a program with Randy Orton, who would then challenge for it. Doesn't make sense. You need to keep this on Rey. I'm not a fan of, though. The only thing I would say, I don't know if I'm a big fan of, you battle this, you have this match and you're doing power moves and crazy stuff. And the next thing, you lose by a roll up. I mean, we see that, I think, a little bit too much where, guys beat the hell out of each other, do all this crazy stuff, and they lose with a roll up. I mean, okay. But outside of that, I'm fine with it. Randy Orton showed up and looked like he was going to deliver an RKO and just did nothing and walked away. Randy Orton is the most intriguing he's been in a while. I actually forgot about it. I didn't think he was going to show up. And seeing him in the ring, thinking he's going to deliver an RKO, winks, doesn't, rolls out, and leaves. Imagine that, man. You travel, you work out, you get to the arena, you're sleepless, and they're like, well, what we're going to have you do, Randy? We're going to have you just kind of roll in the ring, wink, and you're going to leave. All right. I'm sure Randy didn't oppose Mr. Longevity, and he's all about longevity, and rightfully so. Probably like, hell yeah, guys, sign me up, right? Sign me up. But just interesting. I'm sure in the dark segment, maybe after the camera went off, they probably had him hit a couple RKOs so that the live crowd was going sent home happy. So on a final note about Raw, I will say, WWE's continual nonsensical, just nose in the air about where they are and announcing where they are. Now, they were in Fayetteville, South Carolina. Greenville, South Carolina. And they didn't mention where they were. And when they were in North Carolina, when we had Big E come out on SmackDown last week, he said, oh, North Carolina. He didn't even want to say the town. This week, it was just a quick banner at the beginning of Raw and of where they were. That's it. It just shows you what WWE, what their image, how they view their image when portraying where they are, that it affects how people view what this company is. Maybe I said that wrong. They are so concerned about what people will think and their sponsors will think and their stakeholders and stockholders will think if they announce where they are. And if it's not a football NFL city, if it's not Chicago or LA or New York or Miami or wherever, Dallas, that they're going to think that this company is small town and that this is one of those wrestling companies that goes where the territories used to go. It's such small thinking. It's just so stupid. And it's so noticeable when they do this. Like, what is the problem announcing where you are? I understand anytime they're in Chicago or LA, New York, Dallas, Miami, you name it, Sacramento, even San Francisco, Philadelphia, name an NFL city, and they will say that name minimum of 10 times during the show, 15, 20 times maybe. You come to Greenville, South Carolina, you'll be lucky if they mention the state you're in. They won't. It's so small of them, And it just shows you what their values are and what they value. It's just stupid. It's embarrassing. So there, how about that, WWE? Yeah, I mean, like, seriously, just take pride in the fact that you are touring and selling out arenas across the country. You're not going to always be in a big market. But then, no, that's not the case. Well, we're just in South Carolina. We're just an all-encompassing, we're in an all-encompassing Raw. The entire state of South Carolina is here. We're not in one particular place. Vince McMahon and his values are so screwed up sometimes. Seriously. But anyway, all right. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed the show today. That was a blast. I really enjoyed talking about Monday Night Raw, which I think was overall very good. Yes, of course, I had some had some qualms about Lana and Rusev, that whole thing, and Bobby Lashley, of course. And then Seth Rollins' explanation of why he did what he did, blaming it on us. I think that was good, but it's a faulty thinking because I believe it's his true thinking. And his alliance with AOP, loved it. So very interested to see what they do to follow up on this and how things play out at TLC. Again, the TLC preview prediction show with Ashley will be done on Saturday, where you guys can hear our thoughts. And, of course, the AEW NXT review and your wrestling nostalgia comes to you tomorrow as I am traveling, but I'll bring all of my podcast equipment with me so you'll be able to get your wrestling nostalgia fix tomorrow night. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. As always, I'll talk to you next time.